listener production.
I was on my phone texting, and the next thing I know, there's this massive bang, and I run up the back of the car in front of me. She was not happy in the slightest.
It is one of the biggest and scariest issues confronting every motorist on our roads today. Hi, everybody. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
Welcome to another episode of Keep Your Wheels On, the podcast where you'll hear from real people talking about the mistakes that either resulted in them crashing their car or narrowly avoiding a situation that could have been much, much worse. And along the way, we're joined by experts to chat about how you can do your best to avoid ending up in a similar situation. The theme of today, as you've just heard, phones and driving, how dangerous that distraction can be, and how in the briefest of moments, Lisa, this can result in death or a serious accident.
These days, everybody is completely addicted to their phones, but they seriously need to learn to put them down when they get behind the wheel.
Our special guest today, our expert, is Alex Yannick from a company called AccuSensus. Now, he pioneered and developed technology using cameras to detect drivers using their mobile phones when they're behind the wheel. Alex, as we welcome you, probably the sad addition to what I've just outlined there is that this tragically follows the passing of a good friend in a cycle lane, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. He was riding his bike up a bike lane, bright day, you know, 8, 9 a.m. in the morning, and somebody ran into him from behind who was impaired and texting. James was run over and killed back in 2013, so that's one of the things that led to AccuSensus being founded.
The numbers when you first started rolling this stuff out of people being caught using their phone were frightening.
It is really frightening. When we started, we deployed the World First program to try and change driving behavior through enforcement. It's one of the most powerful educators that you can have on the road network. When we started, about 1 in 80 drivers was using a mobile phone actively when they went past one of our cameras. We had an enforcement camera program with the New South Wales government. That was the world first one. It started at the end of 2019. If you go forward 2 years, New South Wales, that was down to about 1 in 500 drivers using a mobile phone. But also those 2 years coincided with a 20% reduction in road fatalities at a time when the rest of Australia went up 8%. It's the kind of pattern that we want to see, of course, that you put in a program and you actually see a change. And pleasingly, Queensland, the same thing happened. So in the first 2 years of Queensland's mobile phone and seatbelt enforcement program, road fatalities there dropped 11%, while the rest of the country went up 10%.
Well, I mean, we've actually produced a learning module on My Drive School specifically around texting, because we want to actually demonstrate firsthand the cognitive load and the distraction. Like when you're looking down, it might only be for a second and a half or whatever, but all the things that can happen in that second and a half, there is no way you can safely text and drive in any scenario. You will crash. It's only a matter of time. And we are so, so adamant about trying to show people, but in a safe and controlled environment, the ramifications if they do text and drive, because everybody thinks they can. In all our testing, we've put through a lot of people in this, and there is not one that's been able to do it.
It does really significantly raise your crash risk.
Yeah.
We'll expand on that as we go in this episode. At the beginning, you heard there from Tom with a little snippet of his story. Let's meet Tom now.
Hi, I'm Tom, and I unfortunately crashed my car into the back of someone else while I was texting and driving. I think I learned to drive in kind of the classic way that a lot of people do. You know, you start with your parents, and I got my license pretty early because I actually did a defensive driving course in New Zealand where I was living. My parents definitely encouraged me to do it. I didn't know what it was, but then also when I learned that it meant I could get my learners 6 months earlier than everyone else, I jumped at the opportunity. Being able to drive earlier meant that I had that freedom to sort of honestly probably just be a little bit cooler than my friends because I was driving a bit earlier. And particularly growing up where I did, which was kind of rural South Auckland, things were a lot further apart. It's not like where I am in Melbourne now, where if you don't have a car, you can catch the tram or something like that. I just had more freedom. I could get myself to cricket games and friends' houses and school. I think the defensive driving course definitely taught me driving techniques that I absolutely still use today, it did make me a safer driver. And I would say that today I am a very safe driver. In saying that, I was very confident. My family has a history of motorsport. I had done go-karts and rallying, and I was overconfident, I would say. And I had this feeling that rules like don't text and drive or don't speed and stuff kind of existed for other worse drivers because they couldn't manage it. I thought, you know, I probably could text and drive, but I get that law has to be there because other people aren't as good as me and they can't do that. So that was kind of my thinking at the time, and I've definitely shifted on that. Look, I'll be completely honest though, I still think I'm probably a more capable driver than 90% of the people on the road. And I do think that there are a lot of traffic laws that I probably don't need for myself. But I follow them, and I was definitely humbled a few times along the way with that overconfidence. I think my relationship with my phone when I first started driving, I was one of those typical young people that was on their phones a lot, whether that was texting or, you know, changing a song or whatever it was. And I think it was 2011 when I started driving on my own for the first time. The don't text and drive sort of messaging was already pretty well on its way. Like at that point in time, phones had been around for long enough and caused enough accidents that it's not like I could say ignorance or it wasn't marketed to me that that was dangerous. Like I think I definitely knew that was something I shouldn't be doing, and I'd also done a defensive driving course. Like I really had no excuse. I was overconfident, and I genuinely thought that I was probably above the rule a little bit because I was such a quote-unquote competent driver.
That quote is a little disturbing, right? What is the laws exist for other people who aren't as good as me. Is that kind of overconfidence a common thing, Lise?
Yes, I believe it is. It's because there's a lack of competence and overconfidence. I think that's where the issue really lies, because they're trained by people with 20 or 30 years of bad habits, and then they don't get enough professional tuition. Therefore, we end up with kids on the road that shouldn't be on the road. Their skill levels aren't high enough. They aren't competent enough. And then, you know, with that bit of ego and bit of bravado, they think they're better than what they are. You know, and I don't mean to be sexist here, but it is a lot more for the boys. Everybody thinks they're a great driver. Probably one of the best things that after they do a, you know, a driver training day with us is at the end of the day, they realise that they were nowhere near as good as what they thought they were, and actually have a really good reality check. I mean, that was something I did like listening to Tom. At least he did some defensive driving, but oh my God, that still doesn't allow you to think you can not pay attention to any of the rules or text.
Alex, the quality of the cameras, have there been some things that you have seen that have, you know, shocked you?
The saddest thing is just how many people are using mobile phones while they're behind the wheel. And that is a little bit of a testament to that theme of the majority of drivers believe that they are above average, which is a statistical impossibility. And that's why it's important to somehow educate people as to what they're doing wrong and the fact that those activities will raise your crash risk. Humans, as a species, are not good at understanding low probability events. And so a crash happens very rarely. You could, you know, drive for years and not crash, even if you are statistically 10 times more likely to crash than somebody else because you're using your phone. It's still going to be a low frequency event. And so the point of cameras and enforcement is to actually bring consequence more frequently, so that if you use your phone, you have to suffer some kind of consequence of doing that dangerous act, but that's a much lower consequence than losing your life or killing somebody else. And that's the point of enforcement, is to try and bring that home and to get people to just stop doing that dangerous behavior.
I was staggered at the clarity of the picture or the vision that you get. There is no doubt when people are doing this. I know in some countries that's probably caused challenges for you from a privacy perspective, but that drives me mad, right? Because the whole purpose of what you're endeavouring to do here is to save lives, and to hell with privacy on that basis, in my opinion.
The levels of privacy controls within these cameras are really quite extreme. You know, we can't even see and open a photo that is captured by our own camera, for example. We don't even have the technological capability to do it. It is that locked away that only our government client can actually see that photo and do something with it to prosecute or warn the driver who's committing the really dangerous act.
Now, people are getting fined not having a seatbelt on from your cameras. Yep. Was that actually a part of the play at all, or was that sort of like an accidental benefit?
We started with mobile phones, of course, because nobody else was trying to solve that problem and there wasn't an effective way to solve it. I mean, police by the roadside can't work out if you're texting, right? They can see your head nodding up and down, but they can't see into the cabin to get that evidence that, hey, you've got a phone down around your lap and you're not paying attention. So it started with mobile phone enforcement. But for us as a company, what we were trying to do is go through the fatal five driver behaviours that together cause literally the majority of serious injuries, crashes and deaths. So we started with phones and it's like, okay, what next? 99% of people wear a seatbelt, but more than 20% of people killed in a car are not wearing a seatbelt. And that varies depending which state you're in. But seatbelts really do save your life. It is one of the lowest hanging fruits in road safety is to just get every person to wear a seatbelt and you will significantly reduce fatalities. And so we started with phones, went to seatbelts, added speed. For us, our next frontier is trying to work out who's impaired by drugs and alcohol. And so we're doing a trial actually this month over in the UK in Devon and Cornwall. Will be the very first deployment ever in the world of cameras screening drivers for what is the likelihood that they're impaired by drugs or alcohol. So I'm hoping that that will lead to something that we can really use on the roads and help police.
This is fascinating and some very, very good use of technology. But the overarching reminder, if we come back to the basis of today's episode, is around mobile phone use and the dangers of it. This is not just texting. This could be app use. It could be all sorts of things, right? Please, please, don't do it. Let's go back to Tom now, who talked about how he liked to use his phone. I dare say we're about to hear how those two things kind of came together. Let's learn some more about what happened.
The car I was driving at the time was a Nissan Stagia. It was my first car. It was sort of a cool-looking station wagon. It was actually a really awesome first car. I'd only had it for a week, and I'd actually only had my restricted license for a week, which is the license in New Zealand where you can start driving on your own without another licensed driver. I'm in my last year of school and I'm in my first car that my parents had bought for me. We lived not too far from the school, so for the last sort of 4 or 5 days, I'd been driving myself to school, which was just the coolest thing. It was such an awesome feeling to be able to do that. So how our school works is you drive along the front of the school and there's a little bit of like a U-turn kind of bay where people get dropped off and picked up. And this was 8:25 in the morning. It was peak arrival at school time. There was dozens and dozens of kids and parents around. And I rock up in my tricked out Nissan Stagia, you know, windows down, blasting Skrillex. And I was on my phone. Hundreds of kids around, texting, and the next thing I know, there's this massive bang, and I've run up the back of the car in front of me. I'll never forget the moment when it happened, because I was on my phone and I looked up and I hadn't hit them just yet. I looked up just in time to see it happening, and I was essentially a passenger in the situation at that point. Like, I think I hit the brakes, but essentially what stopped me was the car in front. I'd only been at the school for 6 months. I'd moved to New Zealand about 6 months prior, so I was the new kid. And everyone just saw me rear-end my car into another car right in front of the school. The first thing I thought was, my parents are going to kill me. I'd only had this car for a week, and they'd paid for it. I don't think I could have done it much quicker, you know, 4 days into driving on my own, and all I could think about was how much trouble I was in, which I think is a very classic response for a younger person. Not, oh, this is going to cost a lot of money, or you're such an idiot, or like, is this person okay in the car in front? Like, it was very much like, oh God, like, I'm going to be in trouble. And then it very quickly shifted to, you know, I needed to know how much damage had actually been caused.
Grateful to Tom for opening up on this on what would have been a very embarrassing set of circumstances. Alex, when people are moving slowly, like Tom was obviously doing, is it an indication that they think it's, oh, look, it's okay, I'll just quickly check my phone, it's only, you know, a set of lights, for example? I mean, how common is this sort of thing going on when it is maybe more traffic or slow movement orientated?
Yeah, I think we all know it when we're sitting behind people at the lights and we can see everybody around, you know, heads bobbing up and down and using a mobile phone. But the thing with this behavior is that it is very addictive. I mean, phones are designed that way, apps are designed that way to capture your attention for as long as they possibly can. And so people do it at low speeds and people do it at high speeds. For us and our government partners in deploying enforcement strategies, all of our cameras are on free flow roads or high speed roads. So we don't actually have data ourselves on what's happening when people are stopped at the lights.
But you see it all the time, every set of traffic lights you're at. And there's the other piece that comes in about the cognitive load, because if you're texting or if you're looking at an app or whatever else, even after you've finished, it takes X amount of time, I think it's 1.7 seconds or something, to actually bring you back to what you're doing to then, you know, start driving again. And your head's in, you know, whatever text you were sending.
Yeah, I actually had to be corrected in my journey by road safety experts on this, because I thought, oh, well, if you're texting at the lights, surely that's safe. You're stopped. You know, what danger can you cause? Maybe a bit of congestion when you don't go fast enough when the light's green. But the problem is that drivers will continue the activity that they were on when the lights go green. And so it's continuing that activity as you're setting off into the intersection and not having that situational awareness on, is there a car actually breaking through the red light, for example, or something that could actually hit you? And then add onto that all of the cognitive load of what was going on with that text, were you, or with that
Where's
phone call,
yeah.
Exactly where is your head at?
What strategies can we look at to minimise the risk of an accident because of phone distractions?
Well, some of the best strategies that you can do is actually get the phone away from the driver. You know, big companies like Shell, for example, for a very long time have had a rule that you can't have a phone with you in the cabin. It's a sackable offence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
That's excellent.
I don't know if it's still a sackable offence. I assume it is. So they had a rule that it had to go in the boot of the vehicle.
The boot.
You know, you could put it in the glove box instead of...
Yeah, put it in the glove box. It's fine.
Put
boot. It away.
As much as you can, that'd be strategy number one. And Apple and Google phones will both have modes that you can activate to try and reduce the distractions on you. And some of the other things, I mean, use the Apple CarPlay kind of feature that has been designed to be a little bit less distracting than the phone itself. I have met with some of the people designing those systems from Google, for example, and that the one that is connected into the car is designed to be just that little bit less cognitive loading on you. So you'll be a slightly safer than using the phone itself. 2013 was our global minimum in the developed world for road fatalities. And then we've had climbs since then. And what happened in 2013, right? The release of the major smartphones, you know.
Yeah.
Clearly, that is a very simple statistic on its own. If, you know, fatalities and road tolls are on the up, it is so much to do with what we are talking about in this episode today. Can we just, before we move on, dispel one thing? This probably sounds like a dumb question for me, right? But I mean, are you allowed to use your phone or claim that you can use your phone at all? I mean, maps, anything along those lines? To me, it's just a simple no. But I mean, is there any legal thing that says yes, you can?
Within Australia and New Zealand, you cannot touch a mobile phone while you are driving a vehicle, and that would include being stationary at the lights. So if you're in the car and the ignition is on, you must not touch your phone for any reason. Doing so for just a fraction of a second is illegal. There are ways that you can use a phone legally. For example, hands-free, Bluetooth, you can make a phone call with your phone as long as you don't touch it.
Is there an argument here around, you know, phones and cradles, particularly when it comes to maps, things that help you, you know, with directions to where you need to go? It's almost like that stuff is tempting you to use your phone because you need it. You've become so reliant on the app to tell you where you're headed.
That's the thing. Phones are incredibly useful devices. And so there are a number of practical use cases for a phone while you're driving. It is legal to have a phone within your eyesight if it's within a cradle. and you can touch the phone for certain approved uses, such as interacting with maps, if the phone is in that cradle. Again, though, I would encourage people actually just not to have a phone anywhere near them. Try and use the in-car navigation system if you can, or if you've got Apple CarPlay or something like that, try and use that system, because it will be designed to be easier to use by a driver than actually interacting with the phone itself in a cradle.
Now, at this point in the story, Tom's just run into someone while he was texting. Wasn't a high-speed crash, but I'm assuming, based on the tone of what he said, that it's still going to cause him some grief. So let's get back to his story now.
So when I hit the car, the kids around me, you know, there was a bit of a crowd, but honestly, the reaction that was the most overwhelming was the person I hit. The car I'd hit belonged to a mum who was dropping off actually another kid in my grade, and she was not happy in the slightest. She gets out of the car and she is screaming and yelling at me, like berating me. I got out of the car, people were kind of gathering around. I had a look at both of our cars. Hers, thankfully, was actually remarkably decent. There was some scratches, there was some paint gone, and somehow my car was quite smashed up. I was hoping it wouldn't be too bad, but there was some significant damage to the front of my car, and really, you know, 3/5 of bugger all to hers. I found out later it was a brand new car. She'd only had hers for a couple of weeks as well, but it was a brand spanker. In terms of what to do next after, you know, I'd gotten out and copped an earful, I didn't really know what to do, or had been told at some point and just didn't remember. You know, I was young and my mind was going a million miles an hour, and all I could think about was how much trouble I was going to be in. And so the first thing I did was actually call my parents. The mum and my parents had a bit of a chat. Then I got back on the phone with my dad, I think, and basically was told to just park the car up, go to school, and we'll sort it all out later. You know, when you get home, all hell's going to break loose. I've never felt more anxiety in my life than having to spend an entire day at school knowing that when I get home, that's what's on the table. I was really embarrassed. Like, as soon as the accident had happened, it's not like I just thought, oh, what an unlucky incident, you know, like this, yeah, this is a shame I got on. I was pretty ashamed of the fact that I'd been texting and driving and had caused this. The accident itself ended up being kind of the beginning of the end for that car. One of the most important parts of a car is the radiator, and that sits right at the front of the car. And that is where water runs through and gets cooled by air coming in the front to basically, it's a cooling system for the engine. And when I had the accident, I punched a hole in the radiator. It wouldn't hold water in the cooling system, which means the engine couldn't cool itself efficiently. You can get kind of like special pastes and stuff that you can use to plug holes in cars, and like putties and cements that are meant to stop leaks and all that sort of thing. And we kind of mucked around with this over the next few months, and it kind of worked, kind of didn't. The car never quite ran the same after that, especially didn't run the same after I backed it into a ditch and put a hole in the exhaust about 4 months later. My parents never really spent massive amounts of money actually getting this stuff repaired at a mechanic, because I guess the theory was I'm a good driver and, yeah, maybe I'm not such a good driver. But yeah, no, that the accident was, it was a real shame. I'd had the car for a week and I fatally damaged it.
You think or sense that Tom's parents probably did it as a little bit of a lesson learner. In Tom's case, it's happened out the front of school. There are lots of people around. If we see someone else using their mobile phone, should we encourage them to get off their phone and be a bit more proactive in this area?
I genuinely have seen people at the lights, and I, you know, sort of put the window down, put it away, you know, like, because I've seen and understand the stats around it. It infuriates me when I see people doing it.
It's quite interesting, because one that everybody really deeply understands that is really dangerous to do and that you shouldn't do it. And we see that in the amount of support that we have for enforcement. So 80-something percent of people are pro-automated enforcement to try and stop people using their mobile phones. And yet still a lot of those people are using their mobile phones. And so there is a bit in that thing of, if you don't have a consequence like Tom's had, that you think that you're a little bit better and that maybe you can be a little bit safe, you do need something to happen to you really to reinforce in you that it is dangerous and that you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And the really dangerous thing with that is that you do it that once and you don't crash and then you think, oh, actually, it's not so bad. I can do it again. And it reinforces in you that you can keep doing it, unfortunately. But this is just a statistics game. It's a low probability event, but at a certain time, you will crash. And at least Tom didn't kill anybody.
I mean, at school with all those kids around, I mean, my God, the risk of in that environment of hitting somebody or running over a kid or something would be unbelievably high.
He was very lucky.
Mm.
And it was a low speed incident. There's obviously plenty of examples that I'm sure Alex has seen at much greater pace and with far, far greater consequences. How can the involvement of phone use in an accident impact things like insurance claims, legal proceedings? I mean, this can have, beyond heavy fines and points that we've talked about, this can have lifelong consequences, can't it?
It certainly can. If you kill somebody, obviously you will have your day in court, and what you were doing at that time will go to what kind of punishment that you get for that activity.
When people are texting and driving and they crash, it's not an accident. They were texting as opposed to an accident, because there are genuine accidents. Yeah.
It's just that that's actually a very small proportion. The vast majority of crashes are caused by an illegal or dangerous driver activity.
Alex, can I come back, if you don't mind? I don't know how comfortable you are in sharing this with what we talked about in the introduction. How much did the incident with your friend, which you used so positively to create AccuSensus, how much did that affect you personally?
I was absolutely devastated. It's sad, like crying in the shower for weeks afterwards. I don't know. I went back. It was just before Christmas, right? 2023 December. He was killed in the USA. So different dates for me versus for him. A couple of weeks of just being a totally different human.
You've done something good, I think, in the wake of this, and you're to be congratulated for this. How do we get through to people? How do we make them realize that, oh, you know, I'll just quickly do this, or I'll, you know, won't take me a second to do that, or whatever, that it can have devastating consequences in the manner that you've just shared?
The sad reality of this is that behavior change for humans is really, really hard to do. For 40, 50 years, when you look at the Fatal Five, we've had roadside policing has been the main way to try and solve these behaviours. Problem with that is that there's only a very limited number of police and there's lot of drivers. It just doesn't scale, unfortunately. Speed cameras, and now in the last 5, 6 years, you've had mobile phone cameras and seatbelt cameras. A lot of people want to go to advertising and marketing, and obviously the agencies like TAC spend a lot of money on that, but it's very hard to change somebody's behavior with just, you know, a small snippet. And now media is very fragmented as well. You can't easily hit everybody at the same time. And so it's just one of those wicked problems, really, that there are no really good solutions for. Obviously, for me, I think that enforcement is sort of one of the only ways to really try and reinforce and really drive home that message to not do that activity.
Probably just worth recapping Fatal Five, because it's a thing that comes up on the Keep Your Wheels On podcast. So just reiterate what that is.
So the Fatal Five are the five really dangerous and mostly illegal driver behaviours that together cause the vast majority of injuries, crashes and fatalities. So the five behaviours are speeding, not wearing your seatbelt, driving tired or fatigued, driving impaired or under the influence, and distraction, which at the moment is predominantly using your mobile phone.
Okay, I want to get now to the final part of our podcast. Let's go back to Tom, who I dare say has learned a thing or two from this.
Technology these days is at the point now where there's really no excuse to actually use your phone at all while driving. Voice assistance and Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and all these sort of technologies mean you can essentially run your phone from your car without touching it. One of the most important sort of environments or places that I absolutely am going nowhere near it is on the motorway in higher speed situations. I think there's this false sort of sense of security with driving on motorways that people get where they think they can kind of tune out because, you know, you're going one way, you're in one lane, everyone's going the same speed. But some of the most horrific accidents happen on motorways. And I used to work in a traffic center in Auckland. You go into a room, it's like this kind of amphitheater type. If you've ever seen the NASA headquarters, it's exactly like that. There's 200 screens on the wall and they are all of the traffic cameras across Auckland. But what I learned at that job has by far left the biggest impression on me in terms of how I drive. And that's that the biggest cause of accidents is distracted driving on motorways. It's nose to tails on motorways. And we'd see 3 or 4 in the morning. People have absolutely no idea how much following distance you actually need to stop your car in time. You add on top of that distraction, eating, you look down for a second at your phone, it's all over. You've got absolutely no hope. When it goes wrong quickly. And you need to be at the right following distance and you need to be aware. Because every second you lose, if you look down at your phone for a split second, you're going to rear-end someone like I did. Even if you have a little accident, your premium goes up, your insurance premium. So it's still not nothing. And just because you're going 20k an hour, it doesn't mean you can't do proper damage. I'm sure we've all had an experience when we've been driving, when we've looked down at our phone, right? And then you look back up and you're starting to wander over the center line on one way or the other. I'm sure we've all had a moment like that. I think a lot of people get really lucky in terms of where that happens. There's no other car coming the other way. There's times when people also aren't lucky. I think the funny thing is when you start out driving, you're kind of desensitizing yourself to what is actually a really quite intense and overwhelming activity. You do kind of get this false sense of safety in what you're actually doing, where you can be going down the motorway at 100k an hour, eating a burger, and really forget the situation you're actually in. You're going really fast in a seat. Just have some awareness of the activity you're actually doing. Like, yes, get comfortable, but also just check yourself as well every now and then and remind yourself that you can really do some damage. And you have a huge responsibility when you're in control of a vehicle to be in control of the vehicle.
How's the irony? Working in that traffic center probably taught him quite a lot. One of the points, one of the many good points he made there just then, is around the distances you can travel at speed, particularly on a freeway or a motorway, in a very short space of time, right? So if you're doing that 80 to 100 kilometres an hour, you glance down at your phone even briefly, you will travel more than half the length of a football field very easily. So if you run up the backside of someone else's car, the potential for serious injury or worse is great. Can I come back to both Alex and Lisa here? How much are busy lifestyles the common denominator here? We've got so much on, all of us. That's the reality of what we do. And we seem to think that we can juggle this while we're driving. That's something that we desperately need to change.
I mean, women obviously are a lot better at multitasking than men, but that's a whole nother discussion. And we pride ourselves in our multitasking, but it shouldn't be texting and driving.
As a male, I'm quite aware that humans can only do one task at one time. So I'm definitely not a multitasker myself. But what's happening with the rise of the smartphone is that the car is becoming the mobile office. And so a lot of people are going, you know, working their day and having to interact with the phone for their job. And this is really quite a big work health and safety issue.
Yeah.
Getting into the car is the most dangerous activity that you will do during your day. Number one thing to do is get the phone away from you. You know, don't have it around your person. Definitely don't put it on your lap. Put it in the glove box, put it in your bag, you could leave it in your pocket as long as it stays in your pocket. You know, use the car-based systems when you need to use something like maps or music or something like that. Remove the temptation. What you want to make sure is that you don't hear or see like the ding or the notification of whichever app is trying to grab your attention, because you will think that that is the most important thing in the world in that moment, just instinctually. And everything can wait until you've stopped the car. Then you can look at your phone. You know, driving mode on your phone can automatically respond to the person who's texted you, for example, hey, I'm driving, I'll look at it when I get back or whatever it might be. There are things to help.
I'm going to get one of those because, I mean, my phone is constantly dinging and it does my head in.
My life tip in general is actually just turn off every single notification. None of these apps are actually that important that it needs to grab your attention right there and then, and you'll be more productive and safer at the same time.
Yeah.
What about smartwatches? Plenty of people have got them.
Yeah, smartwatch is also very distracting if you've got those notifications, if you're looking down at that watch. And it's probably even worse than a phone because all the text is smaller.
Smaller, yeah.
Yeah, it is illegal, so don't use a smartwatch either.
Alex Yannick is from AccuSensus and he has shared some very powerful insights on this episode. Thank you for joining us today and good luck with that trial too, which I think you said is happening in the UK, which is looking at ways of embracing technology to better detect those that might be impaired by drugs or alcohol on our roads.
Thanks, Rusty. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Alex. Really great to chat.
And that is a wrap for this season of Keep Your Wheels On.
Through this second season, you've seen just how quickly an accident can happen and simple mistakes that can have drastic consequences.
Don't end up in a similar situation. We hope you've learned a thing or two along the way that'll help you be a safer driver. Keep your confidence in check. Know when you shouldn't be behind the wheel to begin with. Pursue some proper training and switch the awareness on every time you turn the car on.
And most of all, we hope you've actually enjoyed the podcast. Until next time, drive safe.
Bye for now. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is Keep Your Wheels On. Keep Your Wheels On is a listener production brought to you in partnership with My Drive School, hosted by me, Greg Rust, and Lisa Scaife. Audio production by Kelly Fulston. An executive producer is Todd Stevens.
A podcast funded by the Australian Government and supported by Repco Authorised Service.
Listener.